It's Thursday, the day we reach into our email bag to read from some of your letters.
Our story about Sister Agnes Ramashiga, a nurse and counselor in a South African hospital struggling to treat large numbers of AIDS patients, elicited a very personal response from Aaron Appelt of San Francisco. He writes, "I was deeply moved by your story on Sister Agnes. I have known that I am HIV positive for a little over a year. Already, my insurance covers over $25,000 per year on medication, blood tests, and doctor's visits to keep me alive and healthy." He goes on to say, "It is important for everyone to understand the HIV/AIDS epidemic in Africa and to highlight the great work of individuals like Sister Agnes. I hope she knows that giving people a little dignity while ill is just as important as the antiviral medications unattainable by her patients."
Our efforts to track down the origin of a phrase uttered this week by Lithuanian President Rolandas Paksas prompted Amy Lamborg to send in a suggestion of her own. The phrase was "calm as a Belgian," and Miss Lamborg of Oxford, Ohio, dismissed the idea that the phrase may refer to the docile nature of Belgians or Belgian draft horses. Her theory, chocolate. "There's nothing more placid or serene," she writes, "than a single perfect Belgian chocolate. I find a whole box of Belgian chocolates to be very calming. Or perhaps it was the waffle. Those parallel intersecting lines on a Belgian waffle are very calming first thing in the morning."
Laurel Johnson of Sterling Heights, Michigan, can attest to the gentle nature of Belgian draft horses. "I grew up on a farm where we had many draft horses," Ms. Johnson writes. "My mother relates the story that I got separated from my family at a large county fair when I was about 6 or 7. Apparently, knowing someone would eventually have to return to the barn to take care of the horses, I went to the barn where my grandfather's team was housed. I apparently curried my favorite, Barney, and after finishing that chore, managed to climb up on his back, apparently to braid his mane. My grandfather found me some time later. I had fallen asleep on Barney's back with a half-completed braid still clutched in one of my hands. At that time, I had been missing for about 3 hours, so I must have spent at least an hour quietly curled up, snoring away on top of Barney. Thanks for prompting some lovely memories."
My discussion with top chefs on creative culinary tips for all those Thanksgiving leftovers tickled the taste buds and the funny bone of Tom Levitan of Claremont, California. "All of the recipes sounded good," he says, "but it was especially interesting to hear Ming Tsai talk about how his Chinese family would start talking about their next meal while eating the current one. I thought only those of us who grew up in New Orleans did that."
After listening to our segment about the computerized grocery store cart called the Shopping Buddy, Eric Norbert of Atlanta, Georgia, says the new gadgets can't show up in his grocery soon enough. He writes, "Interfacing with a machine seems much less hostile than dealing with a surly cashier or an indifferent, preoccupied shelf stalker. Why should I worry about their jobs when they both rely on collective bargaining to secure their employment rather than decent customer service? I'd rather a disembodied voice say thank you than none at all."
William Hartzell of Wilmington, Massachusetts, was much less enthusiastic. "Why," he writes, "do I want some electronic gizmo to tell me what I bought before so I can buy more of it? Or to tell me if you like this, then you have to try that. Where is the discovery? Where is the adventure? I can remember to buy whole milk, not the low fat, all by myself. I also know what kind of cheese I like, but retain the option to pick up something different without being challenged by a shopping cart."
Michelle's interviews yesterday with two authors on the subject of incivility in America brought this response from James Radomski, a humanities professor at California State University. He writes, "The real root of bullying lies in the loss of a sense of absolute truth in our daily lives. American society has become increasingly skeptical and subjective in the last 30 or 40 years. When there are no objectively true guidelines for human behavior, each individual makes up his or her own. If these conflict with a neighbor's guidelines, the solution for many is to shout louder and intimidate others into accepting their way."
But Adam Coford of Orlando, Florida, wrote that the assertion that the current generation is less civil than our parents flies in the face of 40 years of civil rights progress. Jim Crow was certainly no Walter Raleigh.
You don't have to shout to challenge us or tell us what you do or don't like. Just send your email to atc@npr.org. And please don't forget to let us know where you're writing from and how you pronounce your name.